Oral questions by members.
Member for City South.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Our province faces a public safety emergency as a direct result of the NDP's reckless experiment to decriminalize hard, dangerous drugs. Far from solving the crisis, this NDP experiment has made it worse, while making people and communities less safe every day. After utterly failing to put in any safeguards, the NDP scrambled to address the fallout with Bill 34. Yet 4 months later, the bill is in limbo and communities are feeling increasingly unsafe. This is a profoundly failed experiment. We've had the highest number of overdose deaths in the history of British Columbia. Will the Premier admit his utter failure and scrap his dangerous experiment to decriminalize hard drugs?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. And we believe that actions are required across the board to deal with this public health emergency. That means the very significant increase in recovery and treatment beds. That means actions to ensure the drug supply, people have access to a safer supply of drugs. Remember, we'll know that the toxic drug crisis affects all jurisdictions in Canada, including jurisdictions that take different paths, that the number of toxic drug deaths has increased by 25% in 2023 in Alberta and 32% in Saskatchewan, provinces that have taken a different approach. We believe that the best approach is to reduce stigma, to create more access to treatment, and to take down barriers to that treatment, and to ensure that that police forces focus in on the most serious aspects of the problem, which is one of the many serious acts of the elements of the problem, which is drug dealing in our province.
Member for Surrey South, supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Decriminalization has created chaos on our streets, playgrounds, and has done nothing to decrease overdose deaths. Instead of putting in safeguards and treatment, the NDP recklessly plunged ahead with decriminalization and are flooding the streets with taxpayer-funded drugs. Over 3,500 pills diverted from the NDP's so-called safe supply program have been seized in Campbell River. This was alongside significant quantities of cocaine, methamphetamine, and even fentanyl in the shape of gummy bears and dinosaurs. Diverted drugs being sold on the streets is a damning indictment of the Premier's failure. When will this Premier face the terrible consequences of his reckless decriminalization and end his experiment?
Minister of Public Safety.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member. And I would point out following up on the Minister of Health's answer to your question, that police are doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is targeting those drug dealers, targeting those who are trying to profit off what is a public health emergency. That's why they're making the seizures that they are doing, Honourable Speaker, and will continue to do that. And we have in place programs developed with health professionals, developed with police, to ensure that we're doing everything we can to deal with that toxic drug crisis. Measures that side of the House supported, Honourable Speaker, when we realized the seriousness, all of us realized the seriousness of the toxic drug crisis in this province, Honourable Speaker. And it's our expectation that when police do their investigations, and this is still an active investigation, that they find those who are diverting from the, if that is in fact happening, when they are diverting, that those people...
Please continue.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. That when they are found to be diverting, and often it is gang members who are doing this, that they are fully prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and we expect that to happen. And I know with the job and the work that the police are doing, that will happen.
Member for Surrey White Rock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, let's be clear. It's this NDP Premier who decriminalized drugs like heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl, and he did it without any safeguards in place. Oregon is taking steps to roll back decriminalization, which has led to the deadliest overdose crisis in U.S. history. Now, the fallout in B.C., it mirrors the same chaos and utter explosion of bad outcomes. As Oregon abandons decriminalization in the face of the overwhelming evidence, When will this Premier finally confront reality, listen to communities, and end his failed experiment on decriminalization?
Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. And I think the evidence shows that in all jurisdictions, certainly in all jurisdictions in Western Canada, we're seeing the enormous consequences for people across society of the toxic drug, the public health emergency we're seeing everywhere. And it doesn't, I would say to the Honourable Member, I think, easily submit to the simplistic analysis. And that's why we followed through, consistent, by the way, with the report of the All-Party Committee, Honourable Speaker, with significant actions on treatment, on ensuring that there's access to safe injection sites, and the success of those programs is well understood, Honourable Speaker, that we take actions to ensure access to prescribed safe supply. And yes, we do make adjustments to our programs in terms, including the legislation passed last fall. Honourable Speaker, I think that is the right approach, Honourable Speaker, to not treat those people suffering from the problems of addictions like criminals, but to treat this as a public health issue.
Sir Whitrock, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister talks about evidence. The evidence is 7 people a day are dying in this province. Okay? Communities are in crisis, and this experiment by the Premier has made it worse. The failure is undeniable. Our streets, our parks, and our communities are overwhelmed. Instead of saving lives, it's led to record-breaking loss of life, families broken, and communities suffered. An example, First Nations near Port Hardy have just declared a state of emergency following 11 deaths in 2 months of a community of 1,100 people. To the Premier, it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. How many more lives need to be lost before he admits his decriminalization policy is a catastrophic failure?
Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. And in the case of the situation in the North Island, the right thing is to work together with First Nations, to work together with the First Nations Health Authority and Island Health, and to respond with specific measures that help people. And that's precisely what we've been doing over time in those communities in the last period, where those communities, such that, for example, Island Health has added 34 FTEs in those communities to deliver health care, Honourable Speaker, that we're adding everything from family practice to mental health services to recovery services, Honourable Speaker. We're going to continue to take those actions. Our response to this has been closely in the emergency that's been declared by local First Nations, Honourable Speaker, to work closely with them to deliver services and supports that communities need right now and there, and that is precisely what we're doing.
Leader of the Third Party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Ministry of Children and Family Development child protection workers have extraordinary powers, including the power to remove children from their homes. Worryingly, despite this extraordinary power, there is no external oversight or regulation of MCFD child protection workers. My question is to the Minister of Children and Families. What is the Minister doing to ensure that the power is used responsibly, that practice standards are being adhered to, that legislation is being followed, and that there is an appropriate and timely level of oversight of decisions related to the removal of children from their parents?
Minister of Children and Family Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for her question. The decision to remove a child from a family is an absolute last resort, and it is made only after thorough assessments and considerations of the least disruptive options and all available alternatives. The vast majority of children and families who interact with our ministry do so and are able to access supports through the ministry and through community. Mr. Speaker, when a child needs to be removed from their home, it is an absolute last resort. And I can say, Mr. Speaker, that there is considerable oversight, investigation and assessment within our ministry, and that external oversight and accountability is absolutely essential to the work in the ministry, including through the Representative for Children and Youth, Mr. Speaker. And I hear in the member's question the concerns for children and family. Those are concerns I share and believe that we need to be doing everything in our power to support families to stay together and for the safety and protection of all children, whether they're at home or in our care.
Leader of Third Party Supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I appreciate the Minister's response, and I appreciate her response in particular that she wants to do everything in her power. When we consider the power that a child protection worker has in BC, we must also recognize the need for independent oversight and regulation. Teachers, doctors, nurses, engineers, biologists, all professionals in this province who must be expected to work in the public interest are subject to independent oversight by colleges. But there is no such independent oversight for MCFD's child protection workers. Indeed, those child protection workers don't even have to have a social work degree. My question is to the Minister of Children and Families. Will this minister immediately take the steps that she has the power to do to ensure that MCFD child protection workers are appropriately trained as social workers, and will she introduce the legislation that will ensure that all MCFD social workers be registered with the College of Social Workers?
Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. Frontline staff are vital to the work of the ministry, absolutely, when it comes to child protection, but all across the ministry. Mr. Speaker, I share the member's belief in the importance of accountability, oversight, also of quality and inclusion and access, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to our frontline workers. This is work that my new deputy and I are digging into, working to build a path forward so that we have the accountability and oversight of our frontline work, again, because the most important job for us to do is ensure that children in our province are safe and protected, whether at home or in our care.
Leader of the Fourth Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday I met with a physician who works in Fraser Health. The doctor told me that if you have gynecological cancer south of the Fraser, there is a 0% chance that you will be treated by the benchmark time. Mr. Speaker, patients are dying on wait lists waiting for NDP's rationed health care. Whether it's Sophia from Vancouver Island or cancer patients south of the Fraser, it's clear that health care is failing in British Columbia. And Mr. Speaker, for me, this is personal. My wife had cancer over 20 years ago. She lost the ability to have children, but BC doctors did save her life. Yesterday, a doctor told me that if my family had lived in Surrey, she could have died on a wait list. Mr. Speaker, when British Columbians need health care, they shouldn't be rolling the dice. My question to the Minister of Health, do you think it's right that British Columbians are dying on wait lists for health care?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker, and I think the member will know, and I hear the sense of a personal impact that cancer can have both for him and for, I think, everybody in British Columbia. It's why we're taking the action we're taking in BC to increase cancer services. It's why we've added since April 1st, since the start of the 10-year cancer plan, 84 new cancer doctors in BC, innumerable number of new nurses, the establishment of team-based care, the actions we've taken with respect to, for example, chemotherapy, where 11% in 1 year more treatments took place. Because we see the central importance of it. This was a central element of last year's budget, a central element of this year's budget, supporting a cancer plan that will deal, I think, with the situation where we're going to see go from 30,000 cancer diagnoses now to 44,000 in 2034. That's why this is a singular investment of the healthcare system at the moment, and we're going to continue to take actions to ensure that patients get the care they need in British Columbia, everywhere in the province.
Leader of the Fourth Party, supplemental.
Mr. Speaker, it's not just cancer patients who are suffering from the chaos that this NDP-managed healthcare system is doing. Vancouver Sun reported, and I quote, a fee dispute between a small group of specialist eye doctors and the society representing BC's eye doctors and surgeons means that 20,000 mostly elder patients being treated for serious eye conditions could be without treatment next month, end quote. Mr. Speaker, this dispute is affecting British Columbia's ability to access vital health care. And last week, my constituency office heard from a senior in Prince George who was concerned about, about this because he can't afford the cost of the injections to keep his eyesight, and he very well may go blind. This senior citizen is now being asked to put out his credit card and pay thousands of dollars for critical health care. Can the minister please explain why he is allowing this situation to deteriorate to the point where seniors are at risk of losing their eyesight?
Minister of Health.
Well, Honourable Speaker, this question was asked 5 days ago by the member for Prince George Vailmont. And at that time, I made it very clear that no such thing will happen in BC. That, Honourable Speaker, let me say just three more things about it, though, Honourable Speaker. That there is discussions between the ophthalmological division of the doctors of BC and a proposal they've made, and a dispute between them and a subgroup of that group, of the retinal specialists. And we are certainly going to engage with both those groups. What we're not going to do, Honourable Speaker, is accept letters going out to patients which cause, Honourable Speaker, pain to patients. I want to say to every patient, see, with macular degeneration and other conditions, Honourable Speaker, that their service will continue to be free and their service will be maintained before April 1st and after April 1st.
Member for Cariboo-Chilcotin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps it's because the Premier is shielded by his personal police detail that he is completely out of touch with how unsafe people feel with rising street disorder and crime. His catch-and-release playbook has struck again, this time leaving a man in a wheelchair stabbed multiple times in the neck in broad daylight in Vancouver. This vicious, unprovoked attack was by a known dangerous offender with a lengthy history of violence, and he was immediately released back into the community until a court appearance in July. Mr. Speaker, the Premier's cycle of catch and release continues to create innocent victims. When will he stop enabling violent, prolific offenders and start putting the rights of our communities first?
Minister of Public Safety and Solicitor General.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member. So it's an opportunity to continue to outline the steps this government has taken to ensure that our communities and the public are safe, Honourable Speaker, starting with getting the bail conditions changed, which this province led the initiative on, Honourable Speaker. By ensuring that we're able to hire additional RCMP officers to fill the provincial vacancies, Honourable Speaker, more than 256, which is already part of a three-year program. We are now into the second year, Honourable Speaker. So ensuring that safety in smaller communities and rural communities and the important integrated teams that are required are in place, Honourable Speaker. Those are initiatives that are underway that builds on the work that we have done, whether it's a forensic firearms lab, Honourable Speaker, whether it's a witness security program to go after gang members, Honourable Speaker, by it's ensuring all of those things taking place, things that side of the House could have done when they sat on this side, Honourable Speaker, and failed to do, Honourable Speaker. We are going to continue that work, Honourable Speaker, working with communities, working with police to ensure that they've got the resources that they need so that we can deal with the challenges of public safety that communities face in BC.
Member for Cariboo North.
Mr. Speaker, under this soft-on-crime premier, downtown Quesnel's chaos has worsened. In just the past 2 months, over a dozen businesses have been targeted by criminals, some multiple times. Mama Sia's was hit with a brazen daylight robbery. Outlaw was broken into three times. Keen's endured at attempted after-hours looting. And Arrow Lifestyle suffered multiple break-ins. The wave of criminal activity doesn't stop there. Wiesel Tattoo woke to shattered storefront. Reason to Run was also hit by a smash and grab. And City Furniture dealt with the aftermath of a broken window. With Quesnel's businesses under siege by repeat offenders, when will the Premier finally abandon his failed catch-and-release playbook?
Minister of Public Safety.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. I appreciate the questions from the member. I appreciate the fact that they find themselves in desperate straits, that they seem to be wanting to make themselves even more relevant, perhaps, than the two-member dynamic duo sitting on the other side of the other aisle, Honourable Speaker. But I want to let this member know, Honourable Speaker, I want to let this member know that we continue to work with local governments to put in place the programs, the initiatives that police themselves are asking for, such as the Revoy program, which is already bearing results, Honourable Speaker. And this program we put in place, but guess what, Honourable Speaker? When they had the opportunity, when they sat on this side of the House, they cancelled it, Honourable Speaker. They cancelled the very program that police have asked us to reinstate, Honourable Speaker. We've put it in place. It is in communities right across this province, Honourable Speaker, and it is working, and we will continue to work with police on the initiatives required to keep people safe in our province.
Opposition House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. While our communities are grappling with rampant crime, a direct result of the soft-on-crime Premier's policies, in Kamloops, a spree of smash-and-grab incidents has created chaos for over a dozen downtown businesses with shattered windows and break-ins. Small businesses not only face constant theft, vandalism, and social chaos, but they also find themselves entangled in the NDP's red tape of the Small Business Rebate Program. Mr. Speaker, this was a program that was announced 7 months ago in July of 2023. It was announced with a fund of $10.5 million, grants to be pushed out to small businesses impacted by all this social disorder and chaos. Yet to date, as of this moment, the fund has only distributed $71,000. Let me say that again, $71,000 of a $10.5 million fund. So my question to the Premier is this: will the Premier step up and cut the red tape now so that small businesses that are just hanging by a thread due to the Premier's failed catch and release policies, that those businesses actually get the help that they need today and not 7 months from now?
Mr. Minister of Jobs and Economic Development.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. Thank you to the member opposite for raising this question. Everyone deserves to feel safe in their communities, and that includes small businesses and small business owners. And we understand the impact that vandalism is having on small businesses. That's why we created this program and funded it at $10.5 million. To the member opposite, we have heard concerns from the small business community. I've met with those people who have raised concerns. We've called together our small business roundtable to advise me on it. And I'll share with the member that we are making changes to this program to ensure this $10.5 million gets out the door and into the hands of the small businesses that need this support.
Member for Kamloops North Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, this is a government that processes prolific offenders and gets them back out on the street faster than the grants to try to help the businesses they're supposed to be trying to help. So be it crime and disorder that businesses are dealing with, be it failed granting programs businesses are dealing with, let's talk about yet another failed grant program, not a loan program, but an actual grant program as a glaring example of bureaucratic NDP red tape. The Blue Grotto in Kamloops is being forced to repay the $10,000 circuit breaker grant plus interest that they received during COVID as a condition of shutting down for public health reasons. The government gave them the money for rent. And by witness by the fact that they're still in business a few years later, I would say they met that threshold and spent the money as it was intended to be. Yet, tangled in red tape and bureaucratic absurdity, the NDP is now clawing the $10,000 back. Meanwhile, the Premier has no problem trying to criticize the federal government about clawbacks on small businesses as it relates to the double standards around the CEBA loans. Talk about total NDP hypocrisy. Will the Premier step up and cut the red tape so small businesses that actually played by the rules aren't punished by this government?
Government House Leader.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I really appreciate the member bringing up the fact that we made some of the largest investments to supporting small businesses directly in grants in the country. Now, Honourable Speaker, not like many other provinces, and certainly like the federal government, they decided to make loans. We decided early on that we knew it was going to be difficult for small businesses to make it through and then have to pay those loans back. Many businesses have been saved. In fact, I would say even the members' community has tons of businesses that have been saved because of the grants we provided. Now, I think the member surely would appreciate that when you have rules in place and parameters in place, and if someone is not spending the dollars wisely or like it was supposed to spend it, there needs to be parameters for checks and balances. We are happy to look at the case that the member mentions, but I will emphasize this important point. We are the leaders in economic recovery in the country because of the supports that we provided small businesses and families throughout the pandemic, and we're proud of that.
Member for Delta South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Extreme cold has devastated our fruit and wine industry, slashing production by a staggering 99%. The financial toll is in the hundreds of millions of dollars lost. Yet in the face of this emergency, the response from the NDP government has been definitely silent. The Agriculture Minister's inaction speaks volumes, Mr. Speaker. No policy changes, no emergency funding, no flexibility in regulations, nothing to cushion the blow or even give hope to our tree fruit farmers, those growing grapes, and those producing wine here in BC. Mr. Speaker, when will the Agriculture Minister step up and provide the urgent and immediate support and relief that our farmers and industries desperately need to survive?
Minister of Agriculture. Minister.
Thank you, Member, for the question. Mr. Speaker, there is no doubt that our wine industry is struggling due to the impacts of climate change. We recognize how serious this issue is. Our wine sector bolsters tourism, provides good jobs for thousands of people, and has economic benefits for everyone who lives in British Columbia. We are working closely with the industry and have programs in place to support grape growers and vineyards. We are funding climate preparedness tools like canopy cooling, flood proofing, and retrofitting to protect against extreme weather. We are determined to support BC wine growers and wineries and will continue to work with them on solutions, including looking at an expanded replant program to meet growing demand. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
British Columbians are struggling more than ever, with skyrocketing costs turning basic necessities into luxuries. Marianne Larson, a Kelowna mother, has watched her grocery expenses double under this NDP government. Facing such harsh realities, Larson has advised her sons against having children. And I quote, "If I could do it over again, I would not have had children knowing what I see now," end quote. As families face the NDP's suffocating financial pressure, the dream of raising a family becomes unattainable, driving many to leave. And the budget confirms this, that there's been a net outflow in the last five consecutive quarters of NDP governance. With this ongoing crisis, why does the Premier continue to deepen the deficit, neglecting the urgent need for relief on essentials like gas and groceries?
Government House Leader.
Thank you so much, Honourable Speaker. And we know people are struggling throughout this province. In fact, we know this challenge is not only in British Columbia, it's across the country, it's in fact across North America. We know housing is one of the key reasons why people are struggling, Honourable Speaker. We know that the lack of housing availability in our communities has put a real pressure on families throughout BC. Certainly, we know those that with means are able to get housing. Those that are struggling continue to get pushed and pushed and pushed. That's why, Honourable Speaker, we've taken such bold action with our Homes for People plan to get more housing increased in our communities, Honourable Speaker. Housing is a key proponent, a key issue that we know that too many communities are dealing with. That's why we're cutting red tape to increase housing supply. That's why, Honourable Speaker, we're finding ways to directly invest in the type of affordable housing that we need in our communities. And lastly, Honourable Speaker, we're also protecting our existing housing stock so that the story we just heard, the folks that have housing, they don't get displaced by investors coming in to buy their building, Honourable Speaker. We're going to continue to do that work because we know British Columbians are depending on us.
The bell and the question period.